The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
The Insight Meditation Center. My name is Gil Fronsdal, and I'm one of the two primary teachers here. I teach here together with Andrea Fella. And I've been teaching here since we moved here in this building in 2002. And before that, since 1990, I was teaching for the group in Palo Alto. And the group predated me. It was a small sitting group that met Monday evenings. And in the 1990, I was asked to come and be the teacher for it. And so for the last almost 25 years, I've been teaching here in the peninsula and teaching these intro classes two or three times a year. And it's one of the favorite things that I do. I love doing it, even though in some ways I repeat the same things. It's an intro class, right? But there's a lot of things that I enjoy about this. One is to share something that's been extremely meaningful for me in my life. And hopefully this is something that'll have some meaning for you that's a benefit. And the other is that even though I kind of have done this many times, I'm always waiting to surprise myself. I'm hoping I'll say something new. And that you won't know it's new, but because you haven't maybe been here before. But a few things of introduction. I don't know if you were all told, there are hearing assistant devices. Why don't you lift yours up and show people? See that? And are there more there in the box? So if anybody would need a hearing assistant device, because this, you're pleased, they work very well. They even work in the bathroom. So. And then a little bit about me, so I've been involved in Buddhist meditation practice for about 40 years, done it my whole adult life, and I was introduced to it when I was about 20, and now I'm 60. And the initially I did Zen practice for many years. I was trained at the San Francisco Zen Center and was ordained as a Zen priest, both here and then again in Japan, and I spent a year in Japan practicing in the monasteries there. And then I had the occasion to go to Thailand, where I was introduced to the meditation practice that in America is known as mindfulness. Sometimes it's known as insight meditation. The Buddhist word is vipassana, and vipassana means to see clearly. So it's a meditation practice to see clearly. So I was introduced to this in Thailand, and then I continued to practice in Thailand and Burma for almost two years at the meditation monasteries there. I came back to this country and continued training here, both in Zen and in Vipassana. And then at some point, I went to graduate school to study, of all things, Buddhism. And eventually got a PhD in Buddhist studies at Stanford. And that's what brought me to this area, was studying at Stanford. And I've never left because of this group here. And as this group grew, it was such a wonderful part of my life to be able to share the Dharma, share the practice, and support many people to do this. And so we had this growing community that some 12 years ago, 13 years ago, we bought this building, and we've been thriving here. I appreciate that you've all come. What we'll do is, over the next 5 weeks, is systematically describe to you what we do with the practice of mindfulness, or the practice of intentional attention, attention on purpose, kind of. And what happens to most people, we all have the ability to pay attention, to be attentive. Attention is going on all the time. But it can be said that most people, their attention is being used by their desires, by their fears, by their concern for the past, planning the future. And so the attention gets pulled into where the mind is worried or concerned or wants to do. And what we're trying to do here is, rather than having attention be used, we're trying to use our intention, to claim it back for ourselves so that we are a little bit more in charge of where how attention is used, rather than having it hijacked constantly by distracting thoughts and desires and fears and whatever we kind of get pulled into. And it can be kind of said that attention, this wonderful natural human capacity we have, is a completely, is kind of like food. And whatever it feeds grows. So if attention gets hijacked by our fears, our desires, our worries, our planning, and all the stuff that pulls us pulls us away, then our worries and fears and concerns grow, are fed. If we use our attention, if we claim our attention as something we're going to apply and use intentionally, then what gets fed is our capacity to be free. Our capacity may not be caught up in the daily concerns, the non-daily concerns, the way the mind gets caught and lost in things. So the question is, what do you want to feed? And in Buddhism, we're trying to feed the capacity to be free, to wake up, to a little bit kind of be not lose our attention, not get lost in attention. And when you start meditating, for those of you who've never done it before, one of the things you'll become quite familiar with is how much you lose your attention. You're something still paying attention, but you're off, thinking about whatever. And then after a while, oh, wait a minute, here I am. I'm supposed to be meditating. And so then you reclaim your attention and bring it back into the present moment to apply it. So we're using attention rather than being used, it being used by the neurosis of the mind or something. So we're taking a very ordinary human capacity that everyone has, and we're learning to apply it to a range of our human experience so that we become wise about how to live in the presence of these different human experiences. And so this course is designed systematically. So first day here today, we'll learn the basics, and I'll offer you the very most basic way in which we train and develop our attention and to help us to calm down and de-stress. And then with that as a foundation, then next week I'm going to talk about how to bring attention, mindfulness, to our bodies, to our physical sensory experience. And it turns out that, especially in Buddhist spirituality, being embodied, being connected to your body, is extremely important. And much of Buddhist spirituality unfolds with being really present for ourselves through our body. And so next week we'll talk about mindfulness of the body. And then on the foundation of that, the following week we'll talk about mindfulness of emotions. Emotions are also a very important part of our life, but it turns out that it's easier to be mindful of emotions in a way that we're free, we're not caught by them in a wise way, if we know how to be in our bodies, if we know how to practice mindfulness of the body. Then the following week we'll do mindfulness of thinking, also an important part of life. And it turns out that it's a lot easier to be wisely aware, attentive of thinking, if you're in your body and know how to be present for your emotions. And if you don't have that ability, then what you'll probably notice is that you'll have thoughts. You'll notice at some point you've been thinking after the fact. You'll get swept up in the world of thoughts, or the thoughts will have a grip on you, and you just can't kind of be free of them because they're really holding you tight in their grip. And so we're learning here by the fourth week how to begin loosening that grip so that we have some freedom in relationship to our thoughts. And then with all that as a foundation, then the following week, the last week, I'll talk a little bit more about how to take the practice further and how to apply it in our daily life. One of the really great things is taking our attention, a heightened sense of ability to pay attention to our life in the present moment, and apply that and use that as we go about our daily life. Daily life is a lot easier if you're paying attention. It's like a lubricant that keeps things fluid and moving nicely. So that's the plan. And in the course of these evenings, we'll do a couple, probably each time I hope to do a couple of short meditations with you, And then we will, I'll do some teaching, and you'll have some chance to ask questions and how it's going and things like that. In addition, we have the number of people here who are been meditating for a long time. They've been practitioners here at IMC for a long time, and now they're being trained to start doing some teaching themselves. And they came along partly to offer to be of some support at the end of the evening if you want to ask them questions rather than asking me questions before we all break up. They're here, and you can just go up to them and ask them about any questions you have about meditation or maybe about IMC if you like. So hopefully you'll get support for your interest in meditation practice. And the last thing I'll say as an introduction is that it's something we don't say very much here at IMC, but I think it's for people, given that maybe you or some of you is your first time here, is that it's our practice and our kind of approach to the spiritual life to offer everything we do here freely. And so we never charge for anything that goes on here. And we're kind of, by intention, a little bit casual how we offer things. It's easy to come and go here. There's no one standing by the door who's, you know, registering you or anything, and no one's stopping you from leaving anytime. And so everything's offered freely. And what some people do is they also then support IMC and the teachers who teach here. And so there's a box by the door. As you walk out the door on the right, and it's called, I think it says donation on it. And if you'd like to make a donation to support the center, and all the support we get comes from people who make those donations, or if you'd like to support whoever's teaching, for this course it would be me, then there's slot for the teacher and slot for operations for the center. And it's not required, but it's really what makes it work in this wonderful business model we have of offering things freely. And that there are people who are inspired to support what we do and see it as a great opportunity to, in some way, support other people because it allows us to keep passing it on to more and more people. And it's been wonderful how we've grown through the support. And everything that happens here at IMC, because it's kind of a part of this freely given culture, is it's all done by volunteers. There's no one on staff. There's no paid staff here. People who know about us from far away assume we're big. We get these letters from people sometimes. Can I come and live at your center? Because we have a big presence on the web. But we're all volunteers, and whatever goes on here only happens because someone's inspired to volunteer to make it happen. And it's a very happy event. It's a very wonderful community and one of the bright lights in my life. So you've stepped into something, I think, somewhat a little bit unusual in our society. And hopefully it nourishes you. It was nice for you to kind of share in that this little culture we have here. So mindfulness. Mindfulness is paying attention intentionally, on purpose, but not with a lot of effort. You don't want to try too hard, because that just kind of makes the mind more agitated. So there's a wonderful art between applying ourselves to be present, but not pushing or expecting or demanding that it goes the way you want it to go. And as you do this practice of mindfulness and develop it slowly over time, it'll put you on a journey. And it'll journey where you'll change and your experience of yourself and the world will begin to change in nice ways. But that journey is very personal. It's not meant to be someone else's journey, and each of you will have a different journey. You take this capacity, it's a simple thing to pay careful attention to what's really going on, and what you'll end up paying attention to, a big part of it is you. So it has to be a personal journey. It has to be a lot about what you encounter, what you meet in yourself. And there's no need to be elated by what you encounter. There's no need to be discouraged by what you encounter. The practice of this, developing this mindfulness, is something that is very forgiving, very accepting. It's a process of learning, paying attention, learning who you are, what goes on, how your mind works, and not to be judgmental about that, not to be critical of it, not to be, you know, arrogant about it, But just very matter of fact, and that's part of the training of mindfulness, is that mindfulness or attention itself is non-judgmental. Attention itself is very allowing of who you are. And in this allowing domain, you get to discover all kinds of things. You get to meet yourself in ways that probably you've never met yourself before. And it might take a while to realize that. And hopefully that's the case. You'll discover aspects of yourself and cherish a deeper connection. So mindfulness begins, the meditation practice begins by having a good meditation posture. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the basic points of meditation posture, because it's such an important foundation. And then within the posture, everyone has to find their own kind of what works for them. But here are some of the basic points. And I'll talk about both sitting in a chair and sitting on the floor. So the classic meditation posture is sitting on the ground, on the floor, in a cross-legged position. And there's some advantages to sitting this way, because one of them is you have a low center of gravity, and you have this wide tripod base, and it creates a very good, stable feeling. And it's easier to sit upright and relax deeply in this kind of mode. I once read a study that the two postures where the human body can relax the deepest is what's in yoga is called the corpse posture, when you lay on your back, and the cross-legged meditation posture. So it's a good posture to develop, to learn to be in. But it's not required to sit on the floor. It's fine to sit in a chair. Those of you who are going to be committed to sitting in a chair, that's what you do. I'll let you know that in the lore of Buddhism, the mythology of Buddhism, the next Buddha meditates in a chair. So, the progressive ones, the old-fashioned ones, still sit on the floor. The old way. So we say sitting cross-legged, but I actually recommend that you don't sit cross-legged, because it puts a tremendous amount of torque on your knees and your ankles. If you can do it, it's nice. But the way I recommend you sit is what's called Burmese fashion or tailor fashion, where one leg is in front of the other. So they're not actually crossed. And if you sit this way on the floor, then it's also good to sit up on something. So for you, for example, so if you sit up on a cushion a little bit, then you can help get your knees down. And if you can get your knees down and sit up, then you have these three points, the knees and the butt, that creates a nice stable base. If your knees are off the ground, then it's a little bit, you're not quite as stable. So I think someone might be looking for extra. You'll go look for cushions and see if we can get some more in here. And then you want to experiment with the height of the cushion. Depending on how loose or open your hips are, you sit higher or lower on a cushion. If your hips are tight, you want to get high. Some people even sit two cushions high. Here, there you go, if you want to try that. And if you're really open in your hips, then have very little height and sit really low. If you like to sit on the floor but you can't get your knees down, then what's nice to do is to get another cushion or a sweater or something and stick it underneath your knees so they're supported, so not dangling in the air. When you're sitting on the... Yeah, let's try that. See that without... Yeah, try that. So the idea is to have all this with the legs and the base supports your spine, so you're sitting upright, and you're not bending over a lot. You're not leaning, and so what you want to do is have a little curve in the lower part of your back, or you want the natural curve that's there, ever so slightly accentuated. You don't want to actually have a flat back, and you don't want to be overarched. So you want to kind of have something that helps the chest naturally kind of feel a little more open and lets the shoulders come back a little bit. So that's for kind of on the floor, the bottom half of your body. Some people find that these round cushions that we have are not ideal for them. Some people use the half moon cushions that we have, and that spreads the weight nicer. Some people find it's very nice to use these benches. We have some under the stage over there, like this. And what you do is you put your lower legs underneath them, and then you sit. So you're basically sitting on your knees, like this. And some people get the advantage of sitting on the floor, but they don't get all the torque on their knees. It's more comfortable. Or you can take one of these round cushions and stick it upright like this, and then sit down on it like that. And that works very, you know, it's a nice way to sit. If you're sitting in a chair, we recommend that you don't cross your legs, but have them, the classic instructions to have your legs parallel to each other, with the feet planted on the ground, flat on the ground, with your knees about a right angle, but also with your knees slightly lower than your hips. If you have your knees higher than your hips, it tends to push out the lower back, which puts a strain on it over time. And so so sometimes it's good, if you know, if you're tall or something, to have an extra cushion on the chair so that your hips are higher than your knees. If you don't have to use a backrest, we suggest you don't use the backrest. There are some advantages in developing attention if you're not resting your back against something. It's kind of like there's such a strong connection between the body and the mind that as we're trying to become self-reliant in the meditation posture, it's easier to develop that self-reliance if you're not relying on a backrest. Some people have to use a backrest, and that's fine. Please do. So some people sitting on a chair like to have their, rather than parallel, like to have their knees out at an angle, just feel wider support that way. And then there's a trick of the trade. And it helps kind of get the right torso kind of alignment, is to take your hands on either side of your hips, it can be done on the chair or the floor, and lift your yourself almost off the cushion or the chair, and let your chest kind of come out a little bit. And then as you release your hands, let your shoulders roll back a bit. Kind of. And if you do that, you probably feel more open here, and your shoulders a little bit more come back down. And then you feel more upright. And probably that kind of posture, you just feel a little bit more alert, and which is nice to develop this attention we're going to do. You can do anything you want with your hands, where the hands are doing the same thing. I usually have to have my hands on my knees. The classic posture is like our statue here, where one hand is on top of the other in front of your belly, kind of resting here. The thing about the hands, if you have them too, if you're sitting this Burmese fashion and you have your hands resting all the way down on your ankles, it might be pulling your shoulders forward a lot. Or if you have your hands all the way to the front of your knees, you also get pulled forward. So you want to either pull it back a little bit from your knees, your hands, or get something like a sweater or something, and put it on top of your ankle so you have some height and so your hands can rest. They don't get pulled down quite so far. Then, your head. Yeah, it's good to have your head squarely on your shoulders. Where else would it be? Heads will lean forward a lot. Sometimes chins will go up a lot. Sometimes the heads turn, tilt to the side. All these things put a strain on the neck and the muscles and on the upper back. So you want to try to put the head in such a place there's no extra strain on the neck in places. And so you want to make sure you kind of, when you're sitting here, you're kind of looking straight ahead, you're not looking to the side. And then the idea is to tuck the chin down and back slightly. And that they say that tucking a chin down and back controls the wandering mind, the thinking mind. And then in our tradition, we usually meditate with the eyes closed. You don't have to. There are some people in our tradition who meditate with eyes open. It's a long Buddhist tradition of eyes open as well. If you keep your eyes open, we recommend keeping it kind of half open, about 45 degrees, looking at the floor, with the kind of focus you'd use if you're looking at a mountain far in the distance. But if it's okay with you, we recommend that you keep your eyes closed. We think it's a little bit better and works a little bit better for developing concentration in the long term. So that's kind of the basic points of posture. And so what I'd like to suggest is that you've been sitting for a while, is that you stand and stretch and shake out, and then in a minute or two we'll sit down and we'll do a little meditation together. How are you? Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, I do. Way more stable.
So in order to, we'll do a period of guided meditation to get you a sense of the basic idea of what we do. And the most basic, general way, the most basic way that we start meditation in our tradition is to use breathing, to focus on the sensations in your body that come into play as you breathe. And so some people feel the belly move as you breathe, some people the chest move, some people the sensation of the air going in and out through the nostrils. Some sensation in the body connected to breathing. And there's a number of advantages to focusing on the breathing. One is that the breathing has a nice rhythm to it, and it's actually easier to develop concentration and mindfulness on something that's changing in a rhythmic way than it is just hold it fixed on something. The breathing is also deeply connected to our inner life, our psychology, our spirituality, our physiology. And so it sits at the nexus of all these different aspects of our life. And to begin to bring attention to breathing gives us access, or it's like a door into many dimensions of our life that come alive or get connected or get harmonized by focusing on the breath. And very simply, some people find that when they're really anxious or breathing deeply helps. They can calm down. So breathing is a wonderful journey. I've been following my breath, paying attention, studying my breath for 40 years, and I find it more and more interesting, rather than getting more bored, like the same thing again, another breath. I think it's really great. So now, one more thing before we start with this meditation. I could say, I'm not quite going to say it, but I could say that this meditation practice can be quite difficult. And if I had said that, I would have said, don't worry. Don't bring the usual attitudes towards difficulty that you might have, like, oh, I have to succeed right away, or I'm a failure, everyone else can do it, but I can't do it. Whatever challenges you have when you meditate, welcome them. See them as part of the journey. It's all okay. And I describe it this way. If like we're going to do today, primarily focus on breathing, it's great if you can do that. There's a follow in the breath, ride the breath, take the breath where it takes, go along with the breath. It's a really great journey. if you can't do that, if you can do it, then it works that way. If you can't follow the breath, then how it works is you get to notice what makes it difficult to stay with the breath. You get to be mindful of what takes you away, sooner or later. And that then it works again. Because the idea is to be mindful, pay attention to what is going on in the present moment. So don't despair if you can't stay with the breath. Instead, be delighted. You get to notice what makes it difficult. You get to understand, slowly you can begin to understand what makes your mind tick. What are the concerns? What are the common preoccupations of the mind that takes you away? Are you mostly a planner? You're planning a lot? Are you mostly remembering? Are you mostly in fantasy? Are you mostly worried? Are you mostly, you know, what is it that goes on for you that pulls your attention away from the breath? And if you can see that and know what that is, you are being mindful. And you can be content. Wow, I saw something. And then you can go back to your breathing. And if it doesn't work again with the breath, great, you get to notice why. Does this make sense? So you can't fail. So just, it's all okay. Okay, so take a comfortable but alert meditation posture. And the alert part is particularly important if you're tired. At the end of the long day, you might be tired. And gently close your eyes. And then a nice way of beginning is to take a few long, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, feel your chest, your torso expand. And then as you exhale fully, relax. Breathe in deeply, exhale and soften the shoulders. And part of this little exercise of breathing deeply is to connect you to your body, to begin feeling the body more fully, to begin putting aside your thoughts and concerns of the day. And then letting your breath return to normal. And with breathing kind of very normally, scan through your body to see if there's any obvious places that you can relax. Some people can relax the face, around the eyes or the jaws. Maybe as you exhale, soften the face. As you exhale, soften the shoulders. Maybe let the shoulder blades slide down your back. And then it's very helpful, if you can do it, is to soften your belly, to let your belly hang forward and down. In the first few years that I meditated, I had a very hard time keeping my belly soft. But every once in a while, two or three times in meditation, I would relax it again. And eventually, I learned to keep it relaxed, or learned not to tighten up. Soft belly. And then begin noticing what it feels like in your body, for you to be breathing. What moves in your body as you breathe? What sensations come into play as you breathe? And if there's some place where you notice you're breathing predominantly, make that your home for your attention. So if you mostly feel your breathing in your belly, or you mostly feel it in your chest, or in the nostrils, or somehow you feel your whole body expand and contract as you breathe, wherever it's easiest, that becomes your home base for your attention. And if you can, let go of whatever thoughts you have so you can better feel the experience of breathing. And of course, your mind will wander off in thought. That's what minds do often. And when you notice that it happens, very simply, begin again. Begin again with your breathing. And a little support you can use for helping you stay with more breaths in a row is very gently in your mind, use the mental note in as you breathe in and out as you breathe out. And that little note is just a reminder to remember to stay attentive. Stay aware of breathing in and breathing out. And you notice you've wandered off in thought. No need to be worried or upset. As soon as you notice, gently begin again with your breathing. Meditation is a process of constantly beginning over. If anything is going on that makes it difficult for you to stay present for your breathing, recognize what that is. In a very simple, hopefully relaxed way, just recognize, maybe name it to yourself. Maybe breathe with it, through it. So we'll sit here for one more minute, and during this last minute, see if you can hang in there for every breath. And then to end the meditation session, you want to end it slowly. And first thing it's good to do is to take some deep breaths again. Take some deep breaths, feel your body. Feel your body against the chair, against your cushion. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So the basic practice of focusing the attention on breathing has a lot of functions. One of the functions is breathing is a great place to begin to strengthen our capacity to see what's here, to be mindful. As we get more and more into the breath becomes more clear, more alive, or more full. And we're strengthening our ability to have mindfulness be something that we use rather than have mindfulness or attention be used by things. And you'll probably notice that if you get pulled off into thought, some of you probably got lost in your thought. Then your attention was being used. So just coming back and staying with the breath begins to strengthen the muscle of mindfulness so that you have more control, more ability to stay with what goes on, not get lost, not get sidetracked. It's also a great way of developing concentration, which is somewhat related. It's also the ability to really stay focused, really not to be distracted by things, not to be pulled off here and there. To come back to the breathing over and over again, to let go of your thoughts and come back, is also weakening the force of distraction. It happens very, very slowly, but slowly the mind gets calmer and more relaxed, because all the forces of distractions that we have that pull into thoughts represent a mind that's tense. And, you know, maybe not, you know, it could be very subtle, but there's tension in the mind. And part of the reason why people get stressed a lot is not because of things in the world, but because of how their mind is tense as they're thinking about things and reacting to things. And so to learn to let go of those concerns helps the mind to relax. As the mind relaxes, the body relaxes. So this simple act of letting go of your thoughts, coming back to breathing, most people find that sooner or later it helps them to relax very deeply. So one of the functions of breath meditation is to begin relaxing the tension in the mind. In classic Buddhism, they talk about taming the mind. So that it becomes, you know, calmer and more workable and something you can use. The other function of this mindfulness of breathing is what I mentioned earlier, is we just start seeing more clearly what is going on. And we start seeing the force of our mind, what's going on. I would guess that with so many people here tonight, some of you were surprised when you finally stopped and started paying attention what was going on in your minds. You might not have been noticing. You're so busy, you're distracted from your distractions by your distractions. And you sit down and you realize, like, boy, do I have all this power. My thoughts are churning. I can't stop them. Or I have all these feelings, or I have stuff going on. And a very important part of mindfulness is start checking in with ourselves, meeting ourselves, and seeing what's really here. And as you go into it deeper and deeper, you don't just meet the surface part of what goes on for you, surface concern, what goes on in daily life, but you start understanding something deeper, the operating software that makes you tick and makes you operate. And it's a wonderful journey to go deeper and deeper in to the mind, to the heart, to how it kind of the source where your life is animated from, where it kind of motivates what you do. So the mindfulness practice is seeing what's going on. And a kind of an analogy I like to use about is if you go to a mountain, a little creek maybe, a little brook, where the water is really clear, and maybe the grade of the river is not very steep, so you look down, it's just clear water, shallow water, and as far as you can tell, the water is not moving. It just seems to be sitting still. But if you take a stick and stick it into the water vertically, then you see, oh, a wake gets formed on the edge of the stick. So, oh, there's actually a current. The water is moving. But you needed a reference point of a stick to see the movement. So the same thing with our mind. To really see our mind well, it helps to have a reference point like that. That is a contrast. And so stopping, sitting still, closing your eyes, is very different than how most people live their lives. And then trying to focus or still the mind on the breathing, that becomes the stick in the river. And you might notice how strong your current is. And what your current is, what you're concerned with, what your feelings are, all kinds of things you might not have noticed if you didn't actually stop to pay attention and check in with yourself. So that's part of the function of this practice, is to help us to see more clearly what's going on. And so as I said earlier, it's worth saying again, there's no need to be discouraged by an inability to stay with your breath. If it's hard to stay with the breath, just be very content that you get to be mindful, to have this intentional awareness, that recognizes, oh, that's what's going on. I'm freaked out. Oh, this is what it's like for a person to be freaked out, as opposed to, oh, I'm freaked out. Let's freak out better. Let's jump in and, like, I have big concerns. It's really important. And the idea is to stay balanced and say, oh, it's like that. This is how it is. Oh, I see how it works. I see what's going on. As opposed to, oh, no. The idea is to kind of, oh, like that. That's how it is. Isn't that nice? So you get to be exactly as you are. It's one of the gifts of this practice. You get to be who you are, but you get to pay attention to it and notice. So that was introduction to the very simple beginning of it. So based on that short experience of meditation, do you have anything you want to ask, or does anybody want to report what that was like to do those few minutes of meditation? Or those many minutes, depending on what it was like for you. Yes, Richard's going to show.
So this mic has a little button and there's a green light.
But they can't hear you if you don't have... He's demoing.
So the mic handle has a button, you push it, and there's a green light. If you talk to the top of the mic, like this is the mic posture, this is how it works really well. But if you start to go like this to the side, you don't hear me anymore. So you've got to really be attentive, mindful of about two fingers away, and you're there. Okay.
Any questions or little reports that you'd like to say what that was like?
If you could use the mic. If you had said that this was really hard, you would have been telling the truth.
So if I had said it was going to be difficult, I would have been saying the truth. I don't think it's on.
I turned it off.
Yeah.
The thing that popped in between breathing and the thing that was going through my mind was a song. Has that happened to people?
Oh, it's very common. Uh-huh. And for now, it's probably best to treat it like any other thought, let go of it, and begin again with the breathing. And sometimes there's a strong hook to music, and you'll get pulled back right away, or it keeps going. Try to let go of it. And if you can't let go of it, then it's just recognize that it's happening and see if you can just let it recede to the background. And just let it play in the background. It takes care of itself. And you try to use your attention to pay attention to the breathing.
Hi. I had a question. I find that I'm able to pay attention to my breathing and be distracted at the same time. So I can like count my breaths or do the in-out and notice, you know, feeling uh-huh. the breathing in my stomach while having other thoughts.
Uh-huh.
So it's harder to kind of leave those other thoughts and focus on my breath because I feel like I'm also focusing uh-huh. on my breath. Do you have any advice for that?
Yeah, a few things. One is it's great you notice you're doing both. That's mindfulness. And maybe you can expand or open your mindfulness wider to really see how this is working for you. How, you know, just keep noticing, oh, I'm doing two things at once. This is what it's like. The other thing you can do is to give more focus on the breathing. So you get starting to notice more the continuity of breath. Get closer to the breathing with the attention. So that not just be aware that you're breathing in and out, but be aware of the beginning of the in-breath, the middle of the in-breath, and the end of the out-breath. Really kind of get in there and like you're in the dark with your eyes closed and you're feeling the walls of the cave. Go in there, really feel the whole experience and really try to be there for the whole cycle.
Thank you.
It's right here in front of you.
I had not a lot of problem with the breathing. The most difficult thing is the posture, maintaining the posture, because I kept getting a tight spot and I had a great deal of tension in my body.
Yes.
And it kept pulling me away from the breathing, and every so often I'd feel I'd have to pull myself up because I was very focused on my body
yes.
as opposed to my breathing, mm-hmm. and I'd go back to the breathing again.
Right. So next week we'll talk about the body and how to include body sensations as part of the meditation. But maybe at the end of the evening, if you stay behind, maybe some of the people here or me can help you work on your posture, because the way you're meditating, the posture you have where you're sitting flat on the floor
right.
is not a really actually a sustainable way of meditating. So we'd be happy to work with it, with you.
I found that out.
You found it out.
I just got a sensation that I was...
Is it on?
Is it on?
No. You have a little button, you push, it turns green light.
Okay. I think it's on now. Is it on? Okay. I just got the sensation that I was in a chamber with my breath. You know, as I was breathing,
uh-huh.
I don't know.
And was that nice and comfortable?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fairly common experience for some people to have when they get focused and relaxed with their breathing. The feeling that everything gets contained in a nice little space or room, Some people reported like being in a nice, comfortable tent or under the table as a kid with the sheets making your fort. It just kind of, you feel like you're the Buddhist, so it's a common experience. It's kind of like the world recedes and you're kind of centered in here and you're not troubled by what's going on around you. So it's nice.
This may be a next week question because it's a question about the body. So I had an itch and I scratched and I wondered if is that a next week question?
Or next week we'll talk about itches a little bit. So you're a little bit precocious. For the time being, for the time being, you know, for this next week, you're welcome to scratch if it makes you more comfortable, and otherwise it might drive you crazy, and also if your body gets really uncomfortable sitting in your posture, you can very quietly try to move, and you don't have to sit there with the discomfort.
When I breathe deeply and regularly, I guess I've practiced using that to rest, to relax, rest, sleep. I don't tend to think, so I'm wondering what to do with that.
I don't know either what you should do with that. Is there a problem?
If I'm meant to be conscious of what I'm thinking.
Oh, because you fall asleep. So what you said was that you breathe deeply. I recommend that people breathe deeply just the first minute or so, when they first, just to get settled in. And after that, in our meditation practice, the instruction is actually don't do any special kind of breathing. Don't breathe deeply after that first minute. Don't do any kind of yogic breathing. Let your body breathe itself, and then in that kind of natural way that you tend to breathe, then in that space begin developing a closer and closer mindfulness or attention to what's happening, and if the mind gets quiet, you can just kind of, that allows you to kind of get more and more honed in on the experience of breathing, more concentrated, and that opens up to nice experiences. Over here, Hillary. Over. Oh.
I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to explain this, but I was aware of my breathing, and then I was aware of my thinking that I'm aware of my breathing, and then it went back, you know how... And then I kind of got lost.
Then you got lost.
Yes.
Yeah, so just start it. Then, as soon as you get lost, begin again. Come back to your breathing. And one of the guidelines for this practice here is always keep it simple. So if it starts getting complicated, then you've probably lost the simplicity of the practice. And just come back and just be really simple with the breath. And if your mind has this habit of making it complex, then be very content you're getting to know how your mind makes things more complex than they need to be. And then as we go along with meditation practice, you'll learn how to work more with a thinking mind and how to bring it under control. So it's not, but that's in the fourth week. So up here in the front, Hillary. Maybe a couple of more and then we'll go on.
I wonder if it's useful to kind of use mental imagery or mental animations to kind of help restart. Because, for instance, sometimes I might imagine kind of the thoughts as stuff on a blackboard, and when it gets too full, kind of erase it, and then it's clean again.
Uh-huh.
Is that just kind of further distraction, or is that might be useful?
Both can be true. It can be a distraction, and it can be useful. Some people think in images a lot, and so sometimes giving themselves instructions kind of through images rather than through words is actually helpful for them. and some people kind of get more connected through an image. So it's fine to use it little bit, but if you use a lot of it, then the imagery actually interferes, because it's a kind of a thought. It interferes with connecting directly with your experience. So at some point, you want to use it just enough to get yourself settled and focused. But once you're there and present, then you want to let go of the images and focus on the direct, what we call the sensory experience, the direct, immediate, felt sense of experience. Okay? So behind you.
So when I was focusing on my breathing, I noticed like that my chest was, that's where the breathing was.
Uh-huh.
So I tried to focus on that, but then I felt like my chest was like getting really tight.
Yes.
And I felt like my breathing was getting like really short.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure how to...
Yes. So I'm not sure either what happened to you, but it's a fairly common experience for people when they start focusing on the breathing to start getting to controlling the breath. Maybe getting a little anxious, controlling it, getting tight. There's a variety of reasons for that, having to do with our psychology, how we usually are with wanting to control things or do something. And some people will think that if they're controlling the breath, they're doing it wrong. And if you can't help it and your system is just controlling it, it's completely fine, because what we're trying to do here is be mindful of the breathing that you have. And so you get to cultivate and to strengthen your mindfulness and get to know a controlled breath. And so just be content with that. And if it's really uncomfortable, then maybe you can open your eyes and just forget about it for a little bit, and then start again after a while. Or it might help, some people find it helpful to switch where they pay attention to their breathing. People who control the breath a lot, usually control happens in the front of the torso. And if you're very attentive, you can notice the movement, the expansion and contraction of your back rib cage. And there's very little control that goes on there. And that's, some people freeze them from the sense of controlling their breath. But mostly I would encourage you, don't worry about the control. The more relaxed you are about it, and just be content that you're being mindful of it and getting to know that, the sooner usually it resolves itself. The more you're concerned about it, the more you worry about it and try to fix it, the more contracted it usually gets. Okay. So it's a journey to go on the mindfulness path, meaning that it's something that unfolds slowly, step by step, over time. It's not so helpful to have the idea of an instant fix, or to sit down and measure yourself. Am I finally now floating on the seventh cloud, and you know, or have I finally attained some great bliss? You know, my neighbors have talked about cosmic consciousness in their meditation, and I just have this contracted breath. And you know, so you have these standards. We're trying to, you know, have some great experience. It's best to put aside expectations, put aside ideas you have of what's supposed to happen in meditation, and be very content to just be mindful, just be attentive to what actually is. And start developing your capacity to be present for what is, for the time being, just with your breathing. And come back to your breath, come back to your breath. There are some people, and I bet because there's so many people here, there's probably several of you here today for whom breathing is not a very good object for meditation practice. Could you had some trauma in your life? I knew one person who almost drowned, and the breathing was just too difficult for, because of the background of drowning. And so there are other ways of doing this meditation besides being with the breathing. And I'm going to offer you one in a couple of minutes. But if you find that it's really difficult to do with the breath, so it's possible, I don't know what the contraction you have, but I know that there are other alternatives to how to do this. It's a journey. So it's a journey. It takes, you know, slowly it unfolds for you. And but it requires... I like to say it this way. I hope you'll forgive me. This mindfulness practice we do doesn't work unless you do it. So you have to do it, and it really helps to do it every day. So to do meditation every day, because it's like working out or exercising or learning any kind of skill at all, or learning a musical instrument or learning a language, you have to practice regularly. And as you practice regularly, there's all these subtle muscles, subtle capacities that get engaged, develop, get stronger, and new understandings begin slowly to dawn. And if you sit in meditation posture like this, the whole body begins to align itself slowly. It works out its kinks, so you feel more and more comfortable here over time. So, but it does require hanging in there. So what I recommend for these 5 weeks is that you meditate every day, or at least 6 days a week. Take one day off for rest, if you'd like. And one of the reasons for that is that you meditate and practice with the instructions I give, and you practice during the week, during your 6-7 days, and you'll have it'll be a little bit easier for you to incorporate the next week's instructions if you have the foundation of practicing with the previous week's instructions. And then do it for 5 weeks. 5 weeks is a fair amount of time to get kind of start to get a hang of it. And then after 5 weeks, decide whether you want to continue or not. But give it 5 weeks to kind of work it out to find out. If for some reason you find you don't do it, say you don't meditate at all, you don't even think about it until next Wednesday, just come back anyway. Don't think of yourself as a failure. There's something very meaningful that can happen, just the continuity of coming to this class 5 weeks in a row. When you're meditating at home, a few guidelines. One is that the classic idea is to meditate in the morning. And one of the reasons for the morning, early in the morning, is before the whole society has woken up and getting busy, and so it's a little bit easier to be quiet yourself and kind of be focused. But some people find they're either too tired, or they have kids they have to get to school, or whatever going on, that morning is hard. Some people find evenings is best. Some people I know do it. My wife, when she worked, she got a meditation club at work, or group together, and they got a very big utility. They were given one very big utilities closet to be their meditation. And so they kind of cleaned it up and set it up, and they'd go in there for lunch hour for half an hour. And she loved it. It was very nice for her. So try to find some time during the day which is a good time for you. But it's helpful, not required, if you're consistent and do it the same time every day, more or less. Because of the way that the whole system, the physical, psychological system, benefits from associations, from regularity. Regular practice, the same time, more or less the same place, allows something to come into gear, that the familiarity of it, that helps meditation go deeper and deeper. You don't have to deal with something new all the time. If you meditate at home, I encourage you to turn off your phones. At least turn off the ringer. Nowadays, people keep their... Nowadays, you can get from our website, there's a smartphone app with a meditation timer on it. And so I guess you don't want to turn off your phone. You just want to turn off the phone part of the phone, and then, you know, use the app, and you can then time your sits for however long you want with that meditation timer app. But at home, it's good to also find a place that's your meditation place. Maybe a corner of your bedroom, someplace that doesn't have a lot of other associations. Like, you don't want to really sit down and meditate in front of the TV or in front of the refrigerator. You know, there's, because you have associations that might, you know, be tempting. And so maybe a corner of the bedroom that not much else goes on there. So the association of that place is meditation. So when you go there, you kind of, oh, I'm here. This is my place for meditation. That can help. The mind is really tricky. And so you can be sitting, meditating, peacefully minding your own business, and suddenly this realization, very compelling realization occurs about what has to, something. There's something that has to be done right then. The freezer needs to be thawed. And it has to be now. So be very careful with the compelling urges that come up in the mind that have all this authority, but that'll take you out of meditation. it's best to kind of commit to the time you have and stay there. There are two handouts on the end of the stage, and the blue handout has kind of a review of these instructions that I've given today, and the backside of it has some kind of homework or exercises, a way to practice at home. And what I recommend, you'll see if you read that over these 5 weeks, especially the first 3 weeks, that you each week you increase how much you sit. I think it begins with 15 minutes a day, and then the next week try 20, the next week 25, and then you can level off there if you want at 25. But to kind of build to that, and then after you've gotten to come through the course, if you want to continue, then you can decide how much you want to meditate, shorter or longer or something. But start with a certain length and then build for the next few weeks. Some of the exercises that are listed there are ways of helping you develop mindfulness in your daily life, because it's not only meant for meditation. One of the great moments for me in my meditation career was after a couple of years of meditating, maybe a year and a half or something, I got benefits from meditating. This feels really good. One of the big benefits that I received early on was what I called at the time, I said, it was a feeling of integrity. I had much more sense of integrity in meditation than I had outside. But at some point I thought that was kind of odd. Why should, you know, I should also have integrity outside meditation, not just in meditation. And then I thought about it and I realized it's the same mind in meditation as outside of meditation. Why do I only, you know, avail myself of this possibility of a relaxed, calm, mindful, attentive mind, this good feeling mind in meditation? And so then I became very interested in how to cultivate and develop the same kind of mind, settled, attentive mind in daily life as well as in meditation. And that became a wonderful journey for me. And one of the uses of meditation was to use the experience of meditation as a reference point for a higher quality of way of being alive. And then knowing that higher quality, begin exploring, well, how can I have that higher quality of being in my regular life as well? So anyway, some of the exercises you'll see in the handouts, we'll talk a little bit about daily life and how to practice in your life as well. These talks that are given here are recorded. And so if you miss a week, if for some reason you can't come next week, for example, it'll be recorded, or previous sessions of these intra-class are recorded as well. And we have a website called audiodharma.org, and you'll get to it through our regular website. And you'll find it there. In the menu, there's Introduction to Meditation course, and you'll find it's posted there. And so if you miss a course, you can get it there. And in the same place, there's a PDF of those handouts. So if you don't get to pick it up, or if you miss it or something, you can get it there as well. So I think that's about all that I want to say. We have a few minutes left, and what I'd like to do is for us to do another, maybe a 5-minute meditation. Sitting upright, and give a little bit of attention to your vertebrae. Bring your attention to your spine and see if you can have your spine feel slightly more alert than how you normally would be. And gently close your eyes. And gently, slowly, take 2 or 3 deep breaths. And as you exhale, settle into your body. As you exhale, relax your belly. And then let your breathing return to normal. And then instead of focusing on your breath, take a few minutes here to see if you can have any kind of global awareness of your body as you can. Just be aware of your body in an open, relaxed way, whatever way the body sensations show themselves to you. The three-dimensional quality of a human body. If you have trouble feeling your body, maybe just feeling the part of your body your hands are touching, or where your body touches the chair, the cushion, the mat, the floor. And then very gently, as if you're kind of easing into it, like you're easing into a nice, refreshing pool of water, gently let your attention ease into the experience of the body breathing. Notice how the body experiences breathing. And as you're aware of your breathing, notice that there's a rhythm to your breathing, a rhythm of breathing in and breathing out, and seeing if you can ride that rhythm, like you ride a wave. If you have trouble feeling your breathing, you can put your hand on your belly and feel the movement of your belly. If you find yourself thinking a lot, you might try relaxing the brain, like it's a muscle almost. Soften, relax the tension that's there. Let go of your thoughts. And then always begin again. Start anew with your breathing. Perhaps every time you exhale, letting go of your thoughts. And then in the last minute of this sitting, relax and see that as you're present, see if you can be accepting of whatever is. It's all okay. You might even say to yourself, it's okay. Just be here, attentive to what is. And then you can take a couple of long, deep breaths, and when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So, thank you for coming. It's pleasure for me to be able to share with you something that's been a very important part of my life and brought me a lot of joy. I know that it's not easy at times. Don't be discouraged. Probably the more difficult it is for you, the more difficult you think it is, the more you'll benefit from it. It's more worthwhile it'll be to hang in there with it and see it through. It's a wonderful journey. So there are some people here who been doing this for a long time, and they'd be happy to be available if you want to check in with them or talk to me. So those of you who are here, maybe like Tom out there, can you all stand so people see who you are? Yeah. So Tom is out there in the outer hall, and Sasha there, and Hillary, and Bruni is there, and Richard at the soundboard, and you want to do it too? Sally? So there's a lot of folks, and Bill and Judy in the back. So there's lots of people around you. So anyway, if you want to, these are nice people, friendly. And if you have any questions about, you know, the meditation, your experience, what happened, about IMC, you can check in with them and ask them. Or you can come up and talk to me. So thank you all very much.